Welcome to the Sober Awakening Podcast, where we empower individuals to cultivate a sober mindset and deepen their intuitive connection to the divine spark within. I'm Tim Lyons, the president, CEO, and founder of Sober Awakening, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to providing inspiration, resources, and community support for sober-minded individuals seeking spiritual growth and purpose. Please note that Sober Awakening does not have a financial relationship with any businesses, products, or services mentioned in this podcast. Any mentions are shared solely because they align with our mission to support your journey towards sobriety, self-discovery, and spiritual fulfillment. Now let's dive in and journey toward a life of clarity, connection, and empowerment together. What's up, everybody? You are back on the Sober Awakening Podcast. I am Tim Lyons, the president, CEO, and founder of Sober Awakening. And we are here today with my friend, Megan Moline, the creator of the Sober Strong Podcast. She has now achieved 2 years of continuous sobriety. Am I correct in that, Megan?
Almost 2 years, yes.
Almost 2 years. Let's just call it about 2 years, you know, for where we're at right now. She is a rock star, family girl, mother of two, wife, and she is just got her life going in a tremendously awesome direction ever since quitting the booze. I think she has a story that a lot of you out there are going to relate to. She was not like me. She was not 24/7 drunk all the time. She was leading a very functional life that was just overshadowed by the booze and alcohol, and she realized it, gave it up, and now she's creating this life that is just probably more amazing than I think she ever dreamed possible. So with that, let's get to know Megan a little bit better. Hello, Megan.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you are so very welcome. For the viewers or listeners out there who don't know this, I met Megan because I found her on TikTok. And I made a comment, and then you commented back or something like, well, would you like to be on my podcast? Megan is the creator of the Sober Strong Podcast, which has a, compared to this, is a very large platform. She made me
on YouTube. Yeah. On YouTube.
No, don't be sorry.
It's Sober Strong, but anywhere else, it's Sobriety Uncensored.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's Sobriety Uncensored.
Like, so if I go into, like, if you go to Podbean.
Yeah.
It's Sobriety Uncensored.
Okay. So on YouTube, it's the Sober Strong Podcast.
Yes.
On Podbean, Sobriety Uncensored. But at any rate, Megan is the creator of that podcast. Compared to my audience right now, Megan's audience is much bigger than mine. We're going to get there though. But you had me on. I wanted to have you on because learning more about you, I think there's a lot of really practical things about you, Megan, that a lot of the people who watch and listen to what we're doing here can take away from. So with that, Megan is unlike, or not unlike most of us, she comes from a history of being quite the party girl, right?
Right.
Okay, so let's go back to the origin story of Megan. Where did you start with drinking? And you know the drill, you run these podcasts yourself. So
just recently I've been on the other side of these, so yeah. I'm still getting used to it.
Okay.
Because I'm usually the one asking the questions. But
right.
So going back, I believe my first sip of alcohol was probably when I was 2 years old.
Mm.
Grabbed the beer off the counter or the coffee table. It was always a joke growing up. And if I remember that correctly, I'm like 99% sure that's exactly what happened. But then growing up, you know, I had young parents and, you know, no fault to our parents, right? I mean, they're young. They're still living their life. I was an accident and, you know, they were just doing the best they could. But at the same time, still in a party lifestyle, moving into a little cul-de-sac, same, all the parents were the same, younger, all the same like age, all of us kids were the same age. So everybody just like, let's babysit each other's children and let's get wasted. And so, you know, it was just my life. That's all I knew was the alcoholic dads, the next door neighbor was an alcoholic. This one was an alcoholic. This one had to quit drinking because, you know, he was an alcoholic, was going to treatment. Everybody around me had some relationship with alcohol, good, bad, worse. And I just remember all the fighting, all the, you know, the toxic things that alcohol brought. I remember jumping out of windows when I was little to go to the neighbor's house to have them break up fights. And just, it was really ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to my high school. I went to a private Christian school growing up until I had the option after eighth grade. Do you want to go to our small town high school or do you want to go to boarding school? I chose to stay home and go to our small high school, which was seventh grade to 12th grade. And there, you know, small town, nothing else to do besides drink. I was born in 87. I went to, so this would put me at 15 years old, if my math is right. I'm 15 years old. I went to 2002's graduation and my dad dropped me off at this house and he went to the other house. We had a DD, just the 18-year-old, I think he graduated too, but he didn't drink. And he had grown up with an alcoholic father, so he just never drank. You know, you learn to drink or you learn not to drink from these alcoholic parents. And so I walked upstairs and I remember the exact same, just walking up these narrow little wooden stairs, go find, his name was Mitch. And I took six shots, tequila and vodka, obviously probably the cheapest because we're in high school. And then I go and find my best friend. She was like my sister. She's like, you did what? You're going to be feeling really good soon. Well, yeah. I mean, I barely remember the night. I remember laying on the bed. We were all laughing, having a good time because, I mean, high school parties were just weird back then. You all just like hung out on couches and I don't know, just fields.
Yeah.
We would be in many fields, haunted houses, up in the mountains. But anyways, my driver came and got me and I was puking. And my mom came home and was so mad at me and my dad. It was my first time drunk. I had taken sips of things. My parents were very open, like, sure, you can try this. But this time was different. I drank. My mom had worked night shift or something at the time. And she came home during my puking episode and was so mad at me. I remember the next morning, it was just a ginormous fight. She needs to go to rehab. And I just, that was my first time drunk. I need to go to rehab?
Yeah. I mean, did you see my face there? I was like, rehab?
Right.
For a high school drunk? Well, yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, she probably predicted a future that I didn't know yet. But that led to many more drunken nights, many more, you know, growing up in such a small town, everybody knew each other. Mm-hmm. We, you know, knew who would buy our alcohol. Our parents would buy our alcohol. My boyfriend's parents would buy our alcohol. We would go to so-and-so's house where we could get alcohol. I mean, just constantly parties and recklessness and putting myself in situations that I shouldn't have been in. I guess I always never realized I had a problem because I wasn't the one shoving vodka in my Mountain Dew coming to class. I wasn't stoned coming to class. I wasn't going out on my lunch break getting drunk. I never showed up to school stoned or drunk. My senior year, I was on honor roll. I got into University of Oregon. How I did that, I do not know. And then just the college days where I got, again, the group of girls I got with were into drugs and drinking. And heaven forbid I ever do drugs. I never wanted to smoke. I never wanted to do drugs because those were so bad for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward, I realized that alcohol is just as bad, but that's, you know, you don't realize that until you're out of it. And so, you know, I just, the pattern just kept happening. I ended up leaving University of Oregon because I was on academic probation because my partying got so bad. How my roommate could stumble in at 4 o'clock in the morning and still be on the dean's list beats me. I don't know. Some people just are naturally. Yes.
Yeah.
I was not that gifted smart girl. I actually had to apply myself and I did not apply myself. So I went home, got a job, got with somebody 2 years younger than me who also was into drinking and drugs. Mm. Never did drugs. Still never. I saw it one time and that was, it terrified me. So that lasted a couple years. I turned 21. I showed up to that job that I went back that I left college for and showed up. I shouldn't have driven to work. This was from the night before. Me and my girlfriend and guy friend drank a fifth of Patron. And this is another news story. We drank a fifth of Patron that night. And I think we ended up going to the bar afterwards. You're freshly 21. What do? You just get wasted all week long.
Yeah.
So showed up to work. My boss was super cool. He's like, Megan, I think you need to go home because the bigwigs are walking around today and you smell really bad. Okay, so send me home. I'm still wasted from the night before and I should not be driving. However, my job was heavy equipment. I drove like forklifts. And I was like, you can just put me in a trailer for the day. I worked for Lowe's Distribution Center at the time. I was like, just put me in a trailer. No, you got to go. Like, you smell pretty bad. So drove home. I probably started drinking again. And it was just the sick pattern of it all. And I just kept finding, I know that in the beginning of my journey and posting my videos, people were like, well, you were your environment. I was my environment. I kept putting myself in the same environment. I didn't know how to get out of that environment. That's all that I knew. I ended up meeting my husband coming home from Iraq party. And
coming home from what?
When he got home from Iraq.
I thought that's what you said.
Yeah. So I grew up with the guy that he ended up being roommates with in Iraq. So super small world. We did not live in the same town, but they ended up being the same unit. They volunteered with the same unit to go over to Iraq. So that's a little backstory of how me and my husband met. But so I went for my friend and I met him there. Like I knew, like I had had interactions with him a little bit while he was overseas, but not, I was just like, oh, you're just an army guy. Like you don't want anything to actually do with me. Here I am married to him now. But
right.
So we met there. We were both kind of like fizzing out of these relationships that we were currently in. And then we went to my brother's graduation party, again, another drinking thing. I was doing keg stands. Him and my now ex-boyfriend were like holding me up at the same time doing these keg stands. And then our next encounter was at that friend that I grew up with, dad's memorial. He was an alcoholic. And at that memorial, his mom, which the ex-wife had said, now I know that he is sober. I'm like, wow, that like everybody growing up always knew he was an alcoholic, always hoped that he'd quit drinking. And here I am having everybody getting ready to come to my house to drink in honor of him, not realizing how powerful that one statement that she made was until I actually got out of drinking myself. Like, now I know that he's sober. I'm like, he had to die to get sober.
Yeah.
And
a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It gives me goosebumps thinking about it because he was such an amazing person, amazing dad, like loving, caring, but alcohol just had a hold of him. And that's how he died. That's how a lot of people I know died. But it never fazed me. It never, ever fazed me. All the accidents that were related to alcohol, that people, like fatal accidents, all the people that took their lives, all the chaos that came when people were drinking. I mean, I woke up one morning, not one morning, I heard my mom crying one night. I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and she had taken too many pills. And my dad was out drinking somewhere. I mean, there was so much dysfunction around alcohol that I didn't know any better. I was not that person that learned from everybody else's mistakes. I just fell into their mistakes.
Yeah. So, you know, you had it all going on. You were never like we've talked about 24/7 alcohol had to be drunk, but you partied pretty hard and drinking was just a part of your life. In fact, you might have gotten to a point where it got worse if you didn't catch yourself.
It was getting bad.
It was getting bad. So, So what about your husband then? Where does he come in? You said you met him through your mutual friend. He was in Iraq with him. You guys met. When did you get married, have kids, and what was the drinking like early on?
Well, I got with him. We were physically together for a year, and then he went to Afghanistan.
Okay.
And then he left, got home in 2012. We got married in 2014. We went to Vegas to get married.
Okay.
19 people came down with us. And of course, what do you think? It was a drunk show. I was hungover on my wedding day because the night that I was supposed to have my bachelorette party. Everybody else was wasted. And I ended up having to like help take care of people. Like, you guys are puking and being ridiculous. Like, I had people being like, you need to take her back to her room. And I'm like, we're in Vegas. You know that that's bad when people are coming up to me saying like they need to go be put to bed. So the next day, what do you think I did? As soon as we got down to the pool, I started ordering those big $32 drinks. Yeah. And then it didn't end. We went down to Fremont Street, just kept drinking, taking shots. So then on my wedding day, I woke up super hungover and started with a bottle of champagne. But anyways, got home and everything just kind of fell into, there was some drama. Some people didn't like not being the center of attention. Adults, like grown adults. I mean, we're adults, but like our parent, like, yeah.
Okay.
Like I said, I won't throw people under the bus, but there was some drama. And that led to some disconnect a little bit. And then we ended up having a reception later. So our reception was in August. And I just remember it just being, I remember there was like two kegs. There was like crates of champagne. Because
kegs, not two cakes. Two.
There was
two.
One cake, two kegs.
One cake, two kegs. There you go.
Yes, there was cupcakes. And a cake, but no, two kegs and, you know, all the liquor that you can think of and all the wine bottles, all the champagne, everybody had a good old time. And it was just, it was always alcohol. We didn't do anything that ever was not alcohol related. And my baby shower in 2016.
So you get married, you're expecting your first.
I got married in 2014, had my daughter in 2016.
And this would be her baby shower.
This would be her baby shower.
Okay.
So I had a problem getting pregnant. I ended up having to be on medicine to get her. And so, but through the process, I still drank. So as soon as I found out I was pregnant, not drinking was, it was not a problem at all. At the time, I was like, I could give up alcohol. I will not give up caffeine. So I did my max caffeine that I could have during my pregnancy. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a high-risk pregnancy, but I did everything by the book. I had the amount of caffeine I could have. I didn't eat the cheese, the whatever soft cheese. I didn't eat the deli meats. I didn't eat the bacon. Like, you know, I did everything by the book. She came, not even a sip of alcohol. She came at 34 weeks. So she was 6 weeks early. She was in the NICU for 16 days. Never did I drink. Not once. I get home 3 days after. So she got home April 15th, my birthday, April 18th. And my cat died on my birthday. My cat dies 3 days after I bring her home from the NICU. And I chug a big bottle of wine. And it led me right back to where I was before.
You didn't drink during pregnancy.
No.
Right?
Well, not my first pregnancy.
Not your first? Okay.
Not my first one. So that just goes to show me that I can go, as soon as I decide to quit drinking, I can go any length without drinking.
Yeah.
But if something triggered me to drink, it takes me right back. So this is why I know I personally can never take a drink of alcohol again, because it will take me right back to those same ugly patterns as before.
Yeah. I think everybody who's in our boat knows that, who has been successfully sober for a while now.
Right. But that was just something that, like, probably in the last few months, I just realized, like, holy crap, I was totally fine without alcohol. And that one moment took me right back. And too many people let those moments ruin what they have going.
I had my first, after I got into AA, I had slipped at 7 months. Because I swore that it had been 7 months I was in AA, and you know what? I could have like a tall 24-ounce Miller Lite, right? Mm-hmm. And I had it. No, you know, I just felt that little bit of that relaxation sensation, that little bit of a buzz. And as soon as that wore off, I was down at the gas station getting a six pack.
Right.
You know? And then I was back getting another six pack.
Yeah.
And thank God my wife caught me when she got home that night, and that, you know, put the smack down on that one. But it was like, as I had intended to do nothing but have that 24-ouncer and that's it. And nope, I just went, boom, right?
And that's when people are, they have the mindset, well, I can moderate. I've gone this far. And I just, you cannot moderate. Right. If you have a problem with alcohol, there is no moderation for you. Unless you're the unicorn of us. But
yeah, I'm sure the unicorn exists. And I do see some creators out there that are coaching on moderation after heavy addiction. I don't think I can do that.
I've had somebody ask me, can you coach me on moderation? And I didn't really have an answer for that because I can't moderate myself.
Yeah, you can't teach what you don't know. And I think most of us are pretty accepting of the fact that we think we probably will never know that. You know,
right. I never want to test it.
What's that?
I never want to test it.
Yeah. So, okay, back to you though. So you got done, you know, you had your daughter, then you got pregnant again. You drank during that pregnancy.
So while I was breastfeeding my daughter, I would like schedule my feedings around alcohol. It got really structured. I was making sure, okay, well, I'm not going to drink hard alcohol. If I drink hard alcohol, I won't feed her my milk. I'll just give her a bottle. Mm-hmm. So let me just drink wine, ciders, beer. You know, because beer helps your milk production. I mean, you feed yourself all these things.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm going to drink the hoppiest beers. You know, I was an IPA girl. So, of course, give me an excuse to drink a six pack with no problem. Ooh, I got some milk going on. Whatever. Moms can relate.
I can't, but I'm sure there are. Yeah, I think my audience is a lot more women right now than men. So have at it, ladies. There right? You go.
I mean, and a lot of them can relate to what I'm saying. We like structure our drinking around our feedings. But at the same time, then I got pregnant with my son. So my daughter turned one in March of 2017. I was pregnant July of 2017. So my kids are 23 and a half months apart, barely two. I mean, technically 2 years, I know. But so that was the year of the solar eclipse. I can't remember exactly what week I was pregnant, but whatever the, not even very far into my first trimester, probably. Because I think I tested positive the July 8th or like right around there. So the solar eclipse, I decided to have a brunch with mimosas. My other friend was pregnant too. She hadn't told me yet, but at the same time, we were just days apart. She had her kid. Like, our boys were a week apart. So she was drinking, too. We were just having mimosas. Like, oh, it was orange juice. It has folic acid in it. Like, whatever. Right. Probably drank a little too many mimosas that day.
There was a solar eclipse, and you just used that as an excuse to drink. You were pregnant. You knew better. You just chose what the hell.
Right? Yeah. By the way, he's completely healthy and thriving.
Yeah. That's, you know, I mean, we all know that there's a stigma around that. And, you know, though, if you were in Europe, I think a lot of those women drink all the way through pregnancy.
And so that started feeding my head. My grandmas were like, nobody ever, back in the day, people would walk into a bar and not even double look at a woman with a whiskey glass in her hand. So I'm like, oh, it's not that bad.
Not
that
bad.
I don't smoke. I don't drink hard alcohol. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, I do compare myself to, well, I mean, I wasn't drinking the way this person was drinking when she was pregnant and her kid has heart problems now. Mm. But, you know, it's the comparison game. So I would drink the minimum amount of wine that I could. However, my anxiety was super high with my son's pregnancy. Part of it is due, one of my friends lost her baby to SIDS at 10 months old. It was a really traumatic experience. The baby was in my house, or we had a rental, so it happened in my house. And to this day, me and that, we're like family now. Mm-hmm. Like that situation brought us closer. But for some reason, my anxiety was so high, I couldn't feel my child all day long until I had a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. As soon as I sat on that couch and had that red wine, and I could start feeling him move. I'm like, okay, so he likes the wine too.
Okay.
So stupid. But yeah, I do remember a story when in between I went out for the first time, like out. Me and my husband went to a brew fest and I got so drunk at the brew fest. Then we went to a bar.
In between your first and second pregnancy.
Yeah. So my daughter was probably whatever March to September is. So like 5, 6 months. Maybe it was October, whatever. Then we went to the bar. So beer before liquor, never been sicker. I ended up puking all over myself, all down the door panel of the car, and had to have somebody bathe me. I'm postpartum. I'm wasted. I'm not comfortable in my own body yet. And I'm just like covered in puke. Like, terrible. I mean, I still had to mom. Where in my mind was that okay? But fast forward, did it with my son too. I mean, it didn't get to that extent. But I remember shortly after he was born, we went camping and I drank 2 bottles of wine. I ended up passing out with him in my bed.
Yeah.
And then the next day, it's like, that could have been so tragic. He was just a few months old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Given he was a sturdy, thick baby, it doesn't matter.
No.
I mean, it's just, I look back at all these stupid things that I did and how reckless I was with my children, how reckless I was with my own self and my relationships. And I mean, my kids didn't have a present mom for the first 5 and 7 years of their life.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was just doing the math in my head. I was just thinking your daughter's 9 then, and you're coming up on 2 years. So her first 7 years, you know, you were there, but you weren't there. And I can relate to that because I think I had shared with you that, you know, I was the type where I was drinking all the time. I had so many bad moments, but I had never had the DUI, never lost the job, never, you know, I had all these things that never happened yet. And therefore, because I was there, I thought it was okay. You know, I was there, but I wasn't present. So sounds like you were in a very similar boat. So you have your first two children, and through the first 5 years of their being around, 5 to 7 years, and your marriage and everything like that, you were just, you know, partying here, there a lot, probably had some experiences that most quote unquote normal young adult parents should not, don't have.
So I, the end of 2020, I ended up getting my personal training certificate. But in the meantime, when was that? Yeah. So I started working at a bar at the end of 2019. Okay, hold on. Let me backtrack. In 2018, my son was born March 2019. So both my kids are March babies. We moved from Oregon to Idaho November of 2018. The day that my mom left, because she helped move us over here. I mean, I have 2 babies, cat, dog, like, you know, husband has the U-Haul. I need somebody in the car with me. The day that she left, I drank so much. I blacked out. I was drunk from morning. I was probably drunk for several days. Like I left my home state of 32 years, 31 years, whatever, how old I was, 31 years. And I think that's the beginning of when more of my rock bottom started happening. Then the end of 2019. So everybody would come and visit. It was always a party. Get your kid, like, you know, people would come stay with us because I was like the vacation spot for a while until it got old. Yeah. So I woke up in my son's crib one time. My husband couldn't find me. I passed out in his crib after mimosas with the girls one morning. And
was he in the crib with you?
Yeah.
You were probably like, oh, I'm going to just snuggle up with you right here. And
Yep. He was taking a nap. I went and found him. Yeah. And my kids were never harmed in any of my drunken excursions. I'll just throw that out there right now. What they remember, I hope they don't remember much. But, you know, I got a job at my first bar in the end of 2019. And then I loved it. It was my first time interacting with the public since I've had children. Loved the scene. I loved taking shots with people, drinking beers, you know, just being outgoing. And it just led me into situations that possibly are failing my marriage right now, which we're working on. And it just was not a pretty scene. From 2019 to 2022, those were probably some of the worst mini rock bottoms that I've had.
Yeah. Did you ever at any point, was there a growing sense in you that you might need to stop drinking?
Yeah, when I got sexually assaulted, or there was something else probably too, but not ready to speak about that yet.
No, that's okay. We don't need to know instances, but there were things where you said, I think I might have an alcohol problem. You might, was that kind of creeping into your brain at all? Or were you just like, this crap happens, you know?
Yes and no, because I always said I put myself in so many situations and some of these things never happened. Like what happened to me in June 2022, that was a situation that I would have never put myself in. But had, you know, drunk Megan in her early 20s and putting myself in situations, that's a little different. But this whole situation, the detectives were involved. And I was like, okay, I think we need to quit drinking. And that lasted a week. I was right back to drinking. And it got so bad that my husband he doesn't do well when he's in a mental state. I mean, a lot of it probably is PTSD from overseas, because what happened to me really brought a lot of things back to, you know, his brain. So him drinking, and then it got just so bad. It was really, him and my dad were drinking a lot one night. It was 4th of July weekend. So this happened to me the end of June. 4th of July weekend comes. They decide to get in the side-by-side and just be stupid. And the side-by-side at the time had a recall on it, which we weren't aware of. But I have an acre. They were out there. They flipped it. There was a hole. The tire broke and it just went bam. Okay. My dad had staples in his head. He degloved his hand. EMTs were here. He was in the hospital for 2 days. Like, he lives in Oregon. He was here in Idaho. Like, it was just, oh my gosh, it was so much trauma just back to back. And then me and my best friend, who both of our kids are just a few days apart, we were pregnant together. Our friendship ended in August. And it's just like, I just felt like I was failing. But did I think alcohol was making me fail? No.
Okay. Nope. So then what was it that catalyzed your giving it up 2 years ago and deciding you were done with it?
So for several years, my husband tried to get me to do the 75 hard challenge with him. And I just never wanted to. The desire, I just was like, I don't want to give up alcohol. I don't need to give up alcohol. Like, I don't have a drinking problem, because I always compared myself to the other people. Like, oh, they have a drinking problem. I'm not them. Well, a little before starting 75 hard, I was actually drinking earlier in the day. My personal training would be done sometimes at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. And then I would go find my friend and drink some buzz balls in the parking lot, or find the Jameson and put it in my coffee, you know, Irish coffee. Like, it's cool. Mimosas, that's fine. Early lunch, let's go have mimosas. Kids are out of school, let's go drink beers at 11 o'clock in the morning. And it just became so ugly. And this is another thing that I started realizing just recently, is how early I started drinking, and it was becoming a much bigger problem. But July 9th was the last time I was ever drunk, or July 9th, 2023 was the last time I was ever drunk. Eight of us decided to do 75 hard, and everybody thought that I would fail because I would drink. Some big middle fingers up in the air right now, because I was one of the ones that won the whole, I finished the challenge.
Okay. You're mentioning this and I'm kind of laughing, because back when we first conversed, and I don't think it was on the podcast, it was in our after or before conversation, but what I got out of you was you are highly competitive. And you were talking about, people thought I wasn't going to be sober and I proved them wrong. And you're a big, if you think something about me and I don't believe that, I'm going to show you.
And that is my driving factor.
Okay.
And I mean, it doesn't work for everybody, but I was the type of person that people just did not believe. And yes, my husband was one of them. Like, you aren't going to win that. He didn't say it in these words, but pretty much, I'm not going to finish this challenge because I'm going to drink. I'm like, no, if I fail this challenge, it's going to be because I didn't read my pages, or I didn't take my freaking picture. Sorry, I didn't take my picture, but Or like, yeah. There was three of us that finished, technically, and because eight of us did it, but I couldn't wait to get to day 76 to have my watermelon margarita.
Yeah.
And I just figured out the dates. So I started the challenge July 10th, 2023. I was hungover because I drank all the watermelon vodka at my house and plus mimosas and other things.
You started the challenge just for this, for people who don't know, what is 75 hard? I know a lot of people have heard of it, but some haven't. It's pretty simple, really.
Yes, yes.
Simple to describe, not simple to accomplish.
It is the discipline factor that people do not like. But 75 hard is a mental toughness challenge. It's not a weight loss challenge. It's not like a physical challenge. It is a mental toughness challenge. And if you are going through something really tough, I highly, highly suggest doing this challenge. You don't have to pay for it. It's all over the world. I mean, I'm not a sponsor of it, but it changed my world. So I'm very, very happy to talk about it because some people are like, you should be a 75 hard coach, not a sober coach. I'm like, well, 75 hard is a really good way to get sober. So it is, you have five main tasks a day that you have to complete or you fail and you have to start over. But, you know, yeah, of course you could be like, oh, I failed. I'm not going to start over. But it's just, I don't know. You have to have the discipline. I always had discipline when it came to so many things besides alcohol. So it's no alcohol, no cheat meals, follow a healthy diet, a gallon of water a day. I know a lot of people hate that, but that was no problem for me. Physically read 10 pages of nonfiction and take a picture every single day. Taking that picture.
Isn't there a workout component in there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry. Okay. I always, yes, two workouts a day, 45 minutes. One has to be outside.
Outside. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I did a lot of walking.
Yeah. So, you know, you tell me that, and I've heard these before. That sounds like, okay, I can do that. That's not a big deal, but it's, I bet after
you eat that chocolate chip and fail.
Right. Yeah. It's a lot. Like I said, it's simple to comprehend, but it's very difficult to do. Like we've conversed about fasting. People say all the time, I'm not going to eat. And then after 12 hours of not eating, they're like, okay, I'm going to do a 24-hour fast. Right. I can do that. I've gone all day without eating before. 12 hours in, they're about to eat their hand off. They're like, I can't do this.
Yeah. I mean, I've done two fasts and I've attempted a third one. And I was like, I do not have it in me right now. But so kudos to you for doing one right now. But yeah, it's a mental toughness challenge. It does come with physical benefits because you're working out twice a day. You're eating right. You're not having sugar. You're not drinking alcohol. You're also feeding your brain. I did not start my sober journey with Quitlet. And I'm glad I didn't because now I'm using all these Quitlets for educational purposes. I started with Radical Confidence. How Are You Really? Believe It by Jamie Kern Lima. I started with like inspirational women and they started like feeding my brain. Like I have the power. I can do this. Like it gives you some confidence. And so I tell people all the time, you don't have to start with Quitlet books. Start with
What is Quitlet?
Like quitting alcohol literature.
Okay, so are there motivational, like, self-help books?
I think one that I would highly recommend for people to actually read if they're trying to. I mean, there's so many of them, but...
Quitlet, like quit literature. Literature about quitting, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Quitlet. I mean, that's what people call it, so I just call it that, too.
Yeah, I'd not heard of that until now.
Yeah, I didn't either until quite a while ago.
It must be a thing. Like, you know, I mean, I started getting sober, you know, over 10 years ago now, and it was just go to AA. They didn't have all this. There's a lot of stuff out there.
There
is. A
lot
of resources.
There is. So when people say just go to AA, it's like, no, there's so many other things out
there. There really are now. Yeah.
Yeah. And I still keep learning about more and more. But yeah. I really think that personal development, if you're feeding your brain with positive things, The Millionaire Fastlane by MJ DeMarco is a huge one. Yes, he helps you realize that you can, you know, for business also. But when you're trying to quit drinking, it can also feed your brain about quitting drinking also. I took so many pieces of that book and would make them into posts for my community because I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so powerful. So you don't have to read all these like quitting drinking books. Just pick up a personal development book and just read them, listen to them, make it a priority. Working out was I was like, oh, I got this. This is easy. I'm a personal trainer. No problem. My goodness. You start getting tired and then you have to. So then it makes it not fun. I did a lot of walking and since I've been sober and now listening to all these books about quitting drinking, all of them mention walking 10 to 20 minutes out in the sunshine. So that's why I think 75 hard is such a good tool to quit drinking. Because it helps you become disciplined. And it just helps structure your day, structure your life, like feed your soul, your brain, your body. Because, I mean, I know a lot of people that have done 75 hard specifically to help them quit drinking and have been successful. I didn't do the challenge to quit drinking. I did the challenge just because I didn't want to be the only one not doing the challenge.
Yeah. So you were going to, you kicked that challenge's tail. You won the challenge. When did the light go on? Like, you know what? I'm not going back to drinking. My life now is so much better than what it is. When did the light bulb go off? Because you just never went back.
No. I figured this out. And I was just telling my client today, I said, I think I finally figured out the timeline. Because we started July 10th and a picture popped up on my memories on my phone and of our first camping trip sober. I was such a B-I-T-C-H that whole entire camping trip. Like, I was miserable. Like, how do you do this sober? Why can't I have s'mores? I can't do this. I can't do that. How miserable. I just could not wait for the trip to be over. And I got home. I unpacked my trailer, cleaned my trailer, cleaned everything, didn't gain 10 pounds of water weight because I was eating like crap and drinking alcohol the whole time. And I was actually going on walks, like making myself be active while I was camping. Something after that trip, I dumped out all the hard alcohol out of my house, given some of it had been old because I used to make martinis for special occasions and whatnot. But I sent my friend a picture shortly after that camping trip of all the alcohol bottles on my counter that I dumped out. And I said, I don't ever want to drink again. And that was a huge, huge thing. Shortly after that, I did my first video on YouTube because my YouTube did not start with sobriety. It started out with health and fitness.
Yeah, you said that.
And so when people say you can't profit off sobriety, I didn't start my channel with any intentions of sobriety at all. It was specifically for health and fitness because I enjoy it. But now it all ties in together.
But now organically, it just morphed into sobriety.
Yeah, because...
And so let me get into this a little bit. So it morphed into sobriety. And is your podcast and a couple of the other things you do, is this your primary source of work now for you? You're no longer, I guess, working at the bar, are you?
No, my husband would probably definitely serve me papers.
Okay. Right.
It's not funny, but it's funny. So I released my first drinking video. I think it went out September of 2023. And the people just rushed to the comments, rushed to the emails. Like
on YouTube, did you do that?
Yeah, on YouTube. Okay. And it was literally filmed in my kitchen, just spontaneously, unscripted, just how I felt, and it took off. I got nearly 300,000 views.
That you know what? People are so, and congratulations to you for having the guts to be that authentic. And that's something that you will hear, whether it's in self-help or spiritual communities, it's be honest and authentic and success will come to you. Don't be afraid to show your true colors and who you are. And you look back and, you know, a lot of people are producing content about physical fitness. Right. And that's pretty much a mainstream thing. But there's this deeper underlying problem in society with drinking. And it's the ugly secret that so many people have.
So,
yeah. And you had the guts to talk about it.
Yeah.
And then they're all coming. They're like, oh, my God. Yeah, that's me. She just has the guts to put it out there. So,
yes. So yes. That video kept me so accountable.
Mm-hmm.
I think my community, almost all my videos, like if it was not for my community, I don't think if I never did that video and I didn't, you know, transition into a sober channel, I don't think I'd be sober. But that accountability keeps me disciplined and just so motivated and Like, I'm helping people. When people reach out to me and say, you helped me get sober, I am now 18 months sober because of you. I am right behind you because I'm 2 months behind you because I watched your first video. I mean, just people, I've 10x my business because of you. I've done this. I'm back with my family because of you. I'm like, because of me?
Yeah.
If only everybody in my life could believe in me. Like, you know, I have so many people that still do not believe in me and attack me and put me down. And apparently I owe apologies because of how I was and this and that. I said this 10 years ago. I need to change who I am. When they never look at themselves in the mirror, I've done the work. I've changed myself. And I just, if it wasn't for my community cheerleading me on, me supporting them, them supporting me, it just intertwines with each other and it just makes everybody successful.
Oh, yeah. And you've put it out there. So like you said, you're accountable. And based on what we just talked about, your personality, to hell now if you are going to fail. You have people who are watching you and you're not, are not going to let that. So you're not going to go backwards. And I tell people all the time, with me being public with Sober Awakening, it's, yes, it's about helping other people, but it helps me too, you know, to be out there. Because to hell if I'm going to let somebody see me out drunk anywhere, or I'm not going to go there. I can't go there, you know?
I mean, it's so, like, it keeps me so accountable that when I go out to restaurants in the Boise area, we have a heavy population of LDS. So we have a lot of places that have zero proof menus. And I
LDS gravitate. What is LDS?
Like a Mormon.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, Idaho, Utah, it's a big thing. Anyways, so there's a lot. You can go to most restaurants and they have their own menu for mocktails. And I know a lot of people say don't glamorize them or romanticize them, whatever. I love a fancy drink. In my very first video, I said I started putting things in a fancy glass. And to this day, I will go and I will take a picture of this pretty drink. I'll take a picture of the menu so I can like try to like make it myself. But in the meantime, I'm like, I hope people don't think that I'm actually drinking. But I like a fancy drink. And I went to an Italian restaurant this last weekend and got a dragon fruit alcohol-free mojito. It was so pretty. It was purple. It was vibrant purple. It was just so pretty and so delicious. My channel keeps me so accountable that I'm like, I hope somebody that watches me doesn't think that I'm actually drinking, because I don't know. It's just always in the back of my head. Like, I don't want to fail anybody.
Yeah, no. You're very driven, and I think you hit a stride in your growth and your journey to success with your online presence when you were authentic and had courage, which, when, just to bridge over here a little bit, when we talk about spiritual principles, people like to talk about manifesting your best life and living in a higher state of consciousness. It's all about authenticity and honesty. It really is, because your soul is on a path, and you cannot walk that path when you are clouded by dishonesty or shame or guilt. We all are working through those things, but
currently,
courage and walking through that is a way that we drop that. Alcohol enables those things big time. So you get rid of the alcohol, then you start becoming more of your authentic self, and then you have the courage to walk through that. You put yourself out there, and all of a sudden, would you trade where you are right now?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I could go back and undo some things, but
of course.
I would not. I mean, like, what we're going through right now, I have, like you said, you know, the shame and the guilt. It's like, I have to learn to forgive myself. I have to work through the shame and the guilt and the regret. Like, you know, karma has a place. And I, you know, it forced me to be more honest and work through things a lot differently. You know, some things you just want to bury. But we, you know, we dove into, you know, really going back to church. We got into a marriage class through the church. And I'm like, oh my gosh. But like, it's, alcohol destroyed so many pieces of my life. And that self-determination to never go back to it is so strong. Like, I'm a better mom. I'm a better wife. I mean, I'm still working on loving myself and loving everybody and forgiving everybody. But, you know, it's always a work in progress.
Yes. You mentioned going back to church, and you and I were chatting about how a lot of things start with self-forgiveness. You mentioned karma, and I think you were talking about your own karma. In spiritual circles, do you know how to get rid of your karma without it coming back to you? Forgive yourself and you release it. Forgiveness releases karma. When Jesus was on the cross, I've heard this, when Jesus was on the cross, what did he say? Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do.
Right.
He forgave them. Obviously, he didn't hold a grudge, but through that forgiveness, he released his own karma. When we hold grudges against ourselves, against other people, that's when we reflect that back to ourselves and we incur our own karma. When you totally forgive everybody and everything and yourself, first and foremost, there's no need for karma. You're forgiven. You are forgiven, and forgiveness like it never happened. You can, that whole forgiven, yeah, I can forgive, but I can't forget. No, really, try to forget.
I tried,
and then
to
your
forget.
Karma's
now
gone.
I have to learn to forgive myself.
What's that? Yeah.
That's
an even simpler concept than 75 hard, but doing it like 75 hard is very, very difficult.
And I think if I was to ever do 75 hard again, it would be to even excel my mental strength even more. Like mm-hmm. I have a lot of mental awareness, or I have a lot of mental things that I still need to strengthen myself. And, you know, I don't think we've prayed so much in our whole entire lives besides the last 3.5 weeks, because it's just been a roller coaster from my drunken past that came mm-hmm. to surface.
Well, you're working on that. It's all coming up. And you have a tremendous forgiveness opportunity there for yourself and for others. And I think, you know, you kind of can see that. If others can see that, great. If they can't, well, that's the way it is. You can only control you.
Right. That's a tough one.
That's a tough one as well. So you mentioned you're going back to church. And, you know, with the Sober Awakening thing I've put together here, we're all about different modalities of spiritual growth in sobriety. You were born and raised Christian.
I was born and raised Seventh-day Adventist.
Seventh-day Adventist. So
I can't tell you the background. It's
okay,
just
what type of Christian
Saturday.
Is that? Because
it was,
I know,
Saturdays, more vegetarians, more don't eat this meat, yeah. Don't eat that meat. But
so
I mean,
a Catholic, a lot of the Christians don't even think we're Christian, you know. But
yeah. So we actually, the year that we got married, or the year after we got married, I can't remember exactly, we got baptized at the Calvary Church in Corvallis. And we moved to Idaho. We kind of bounced churches, and now we're back at the Calvary. So we like the way they teach through the Bible. Like, we've tried some other churches and just never left fulfilled. But I can honestly say that I'm not the biggest church lover. Like, I have a problem, like, it's really uncomfortable for me, but I leave with the message, and especially with what we're going through right now, some of these messages I really needed to hear. And I'm like,
yeah,
I got this.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. That is so, so good to hear that you've kind of grasped onto something that is giving you a sense of spiritual grounding that goes beyond your sobriety. And for you, it's been diving deeper into the Christian aspect of things. And go ahead.
Oh, right. So yeah, I mean, the school that I went to was Seventh-day Adventist, but I mean, people went there from all denominations or none at all. But then my grandma was such a huge influence in my life that I have these morals that were instilled in me, but yet I have been really immoral. Like, I've done a lot of things that, like, that's where that shame comes. I'm like, oh, I'm not supposed to be like that.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done that. It's just the gross parts of my life that I can't take back, but I can learn from now that I'm completely sober.
Yes, you can't take them back. You can learn from them. And then if you learn from them, how else were you going to learn?
How do we don't make mistakes? Like,
right?
How
else were you going to learn? Right? Very seldom in life does anybody learn from anything but experience. People ask advice all the time, but how often do we ever follow advice?
Right.
Right? So
and that's what I say in my coaching calls. I'm like, I can give you all the tools, the resources, talk to you every single day. But if you don't do the work and if you don't want it bad enough, like you have to do the work.
I will tell you something that I have wholeheartedly come to believe, whether it's via Christianity, and I get this from, you can find this whether you are looking in the Bible or you are looking in Egyptian, Hermetics, Hindu tradition, Buddhism, the woo-woo circle, whatever it might be. You can find it anywhere. The whole thing about forgiveness is so that we can have these experiences, we can forgive them, we can learn from them, realize that when we learn from them, we are better off for them. And therefore, we ditch the guilt and shame via whatever way your faith, your practice dictates. And therefore, they kind of become blessings because you could not have learned the light unless you walked in the dark.
That's a good one.
No, that's it. How else are you going to know and appreciate the light unless you walk in the dark?
Like so many people that I talk to are just, if I could tell my 18-year-old self or my 20-year-old self or this, it's like, but then it wouldn't have got you to where you are now.
Right.
Like some of these people that I've had podcasts with have such traumatic stories, but now looking where they are now, I'm like, you don't want to take any of that back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, are a huge role in this community. You're doing so much good for your life. You have, you know, you're a huge entrepreneur and doing so well.
Yeah. So you maybe need to look in the mirror and say that.
Yes. You know, it's really hard because, you know, when we get through what we're going through right now, I will be a little bit more open to talk about it. But
that's okay.
I'm sure people can read between the lines because, you know, I do have a track record. And I was not a good, my soul was never in the right place when I was drunk.
But then
the devil was always working on me.
If you can come out of this better off for it, then actually I believe that whatever you experienced, you'll look back, you'll be able to help people with their own traumas that are related to that. You will go from the quote unquote proverbial sinner to being their savior. But you would not be able to do that if it wasn't for your misgivings. So you had to have those to be the light in the world that you are, whether you realize it yet or not. Eventually, you will come to a state where you forgive yourself for it and anybody else who you need to forgive. But it all starts with forgiving you.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just like we can't love other people if we can't love ourselves.
Absolutely. So, yeah. That's right where it's at. So you are probably spiritually right now, would you say you're diving into your Christianity? Is that where you're really getting your foothold?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I remember I said something earlier, and I don't know where I was going with that, but it's just always been a foundation for me. I've always, you know, known the Bible, the Ten Commandments, Adam and Eve, man is man, woman is woman, man marries woman. You know, like I know all these things, like, you know, adultery, infidelity, like murder, you know, all of these things, you know, save yourself for marriage. But, you know, alcohol played a huge role in a lot of my misleadings.
Yeah. Yeah. But now you've had some courage. You've seen the light on the other side. You're starting to get by all that stuff. Like you just said earlier, you're a better mom than you've ever been before. You're happier, probably overall happier. And although you're going through a few things you don't want to do right now, you're probably overall happier, have a level of happiness that you never had before, or at least fulfillment.
Yeah.
You know?
No.
And
yeah.
Yeah. And with that, you are, and you even recognize how many people you are helping through your platform.
That's the one thing I have to keep reminding myself. Like, I am helping people, and people will message me and be like, Megan, you are helping people, but you also need to take care of yourself. And I'm like, I mean, true, but I mean, they keep me going.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask you this, Megan, kind of in conclusion here, I'm going to, you know, when this goes up, I will have somebody who watches this that says, I love that woman's strength. I love what that woman has done. I love her authenticity. I love her courage. I want to be like Megan, but I'm stuck where Megan used to be. What one thing can they go do right now? And you're not allowed to say 75 hard. What can they do right now, today, that's going to help kick off their walk down the path that you walked?
There's so many things, but honestly, get the alcohol out of your house.
Get it out of your house.
Just dump it down the drain. And because I know too many people that have fallen back because they don't get the alcohol out of their house. Well, I'm just going to tape it up and write myself a note. No, get the freaking bottle down the drain, throw it in the trash on trash day and let it go away. Yeah. Like, get the alcohol out of your house. Tell somebody, like, talk to people. Like, I had people reach out to me. I do discovery calls and I've had people question, do I actually have a problem? And then we dive deep into it and we figure out that they do have a problem. I mean, just being honest, open, and willing about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's that HOW acronym.
And yeah, and I think you're just a shining example of what happens when you can be honest. You go from a rock bottom to a really good place, you know.
Many rock bottoms. And let me tell you, I may look normal. And that's the sad thing is a lot of people look way like normal. Mm-hmm. You don't have a drinking problem. I've gotten so many comments. Oh, girl, you have no idea. Okay, maybe I didn't lose my job, get DUIs, go to jail, like physically. I'm not going to say I ever physically hurt people. I have thrown coffee on my husband. I have been physical with other people. But at the same time, like, my rock bottoms were a lot different than other people's. I had a legit problem with alcohol. It was affecting my life. And I think that for those, if it is affecting your life in any way, shape, or form, you really have to reevaluate your relationship with alcohol.
Yeah. So get the liquor out of the house and go from there. That would be your
step one. Just be honest with yourself.
And be honest with yourself.
Yes, because too many people are like, I don't have a problem because my life is functional. It looks together on the outside.
Yeah.
But really, it's a disaster in the inside. That was my life.
Yeah. And your favorite spiritual practice right now? And it doesn't have to be anything nuts like I meditate for 3 hours with my bare feet in the grass. It can be going and praying on a regular basis or reading the Bible. What's your favorite go-to spiritually?
Lately, I will say that I stopped listening to anything, but I just turn a Christian playlist on.
Okay. So sometimes it's not, it's just changing your habit. It doesn't mean it's stopping doing something as opposed to doing more of something else.
Right. And I got that from a person that I did a podcast with. He's like, I start my morning every day with just worship type music. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I love that because I'm going through right now, I don't need the like breakup songs.
Right.
I'm a country girl. But so I'm like, I don't want to listen to these anymore. I'm going to put something on that fills my soul and I will go for a walk.
Yeah. Well, you're doing amazing things, Megan. And I am going to wrap this up now. Is there anything you want to say before we sign off? I would encourage everybody out there to take a peek at Megan's Sober Strong podcast on YouTube. She has a lot of great content about just great stories of people who had all kinds of experiences that were due to drinking and or other drugs. But also, there's a lot of common threads we all share out there, and you'll find them in her content. But anyway, what would you like to tell the world before we check the box on this one?
Alcohol doesn't discriminate. It doesn't matter if you are the CEO of one of the major companies in the world or barely being able to feed yourself. Like, alcohol has it does not discriminate. It doesn't care if you're purple, pink, yellow, white. Like, it's going to get you. Nobody's story is better or worse than the others. We all come up from a place of wanting the same thing, I would hope. Like, we all, those of us that are here watching, I'm assuming want to be sober. You can't compare my story to somebody that was in liver failure. Like, maybe you don't resonate with me, but maybe you resonate with the person that went through delirium tremens or liver failure, surviving cirrhosis, or, you know, it doesn't matter what your story is. You just have to share it. Somebody will resonate with it. And, you know, I've been told that, oh, it's just spit in the face to some of us that were actual alcoholics. I'm like,
Yeah.
My story is my story. Your story is your story. we don't need to play the comparison game.
And life gets better. You are a shining example, I think, of life getting better when you have the courage to get honest with yourself and then to share it with others and to be the light that you are through your experience. So anyway,
just never give up.
Never give up. No, absolutely not. I mean, as long as we're still here on this side of the ground, we have a chance, right?
Yes. And go get the Nike shirt that says, just do it. Like, I mean,
just do it.
I always just tell people, just freaking do it. Just start. Just try. You just got to do it. And people will question and say, well, some people can't just do it. If you want it bad enough, you'll put yourself in a rehab. You'll go to a recovery place somewhere. You'll figure it out if you want it bad enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, Megan, thank you so much for being with us. We love what you bring here. Thank you for being a new friend and part of now the Sober Awakening family.
Yeah.
And just love this conversation. Thank you for doing what you do and just keep doing it.
Well, thanks for having me, Tim.
You are so welcome. All right. See you later, everybody. Everybody have a good one. And thank you again, Megan. Love you all. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Sober Awakening podcast. We are so grateful and excited that you're part of this journey. As always, please remember, any businesses, services, or individuals mentioned here are shared because they resonate with our mission. We receive no financial benefit from promoting them. It's all about guiding you toward what inspires and empowers your journey. If you've found value in this podcast, please consider supporting our mission with a tax-deductible donation at www.soberawakening.org. Every contribution helps us continue providing resources and inspiration for those seeking sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. Don't forget to subscribe, share this episode, and visit us at soberawakening.org for more resources and upcoming events. Let's continue this path together toward a life of sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. We love you so much. Until next time, stay sober-minded and intuitively guided.